Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live today. Oculus Rift is back. Netflix is disses Amazon, and Facebook makes a move. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Be like this.
Uh-huh.
Be like this.
J. Cole.
Somebody should have told me it would be like this.
New album. Yeah. Coming?
New album coming. It should be coming soon.
Yeah.
In the next couple of days. But this track right here is number one track for hip-hop. This and Kanye, some might say.
Yeah.
But really talking about, just false prophets, man. How we idolize rappers who are about nothing.
Wow.
Coming from their necks. I love it.
I like it, too. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech. Shall we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective? I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by the man you just heard, Akili Shine. How you doing?
Doing pretty all right, my man.
Cole didn't get really snubbed at the Grammys because he wasn't really, he didn't have to join out. Eligible, right?
No. That's not true. He was nominated for a Grammy, and it was the first time ever that a hip-hop artist was nominated for a Grammy and didn't have features. And he was snubbed, actually. He didn't win anything.
But
I don't know if that was last year or the year
before. I'm talking about the Grammy nominations came out yesterday.
Oh, you're talking about currently?
Yeah.
Right. He didn't have anything.
Right, he didn't have anything out. But not bad. I mean, like, I just want to touch on that briefly because it's just, you know, culture. I didn't put it in the rundown, but, like, you know, I mean, no big surprises. I mean, Kanye kind of snubbed on the big categories. I mean, he got nominated for the hip hop. What do you think of both the sort of, it feels like a political decision to place Solange firmly in the R&B category, you know, and sort of campaign her as best R&B and Beyonce as sort of as everything else, as to not pit them against each other. Do you think that was intentional?
I mean, what type of music does Solange make?
Well,
it's R&B music.
It is R&B music, but again, you know, you have people like, you know, Drake and Justin Bieber in the record of the year categories and the large categories, and also in hip hop categories and also in the pop categories. So it's not unlikely to have artists be in multiple categories.
Yeah, but is she in multiple categories? That's
no.
Not the argument. She's in the category that's the central focus of her music.
Yeah.
So, and to that point, you know, I got to give a shout out to my boy Troy Johnson that
yes.
he produced the record.
Yes.
Produced four or five tracks on the record, and the one that she's actually nominated for is the one he produced, Cranes in the Sky. So big up to him.
Big up to Troy. congratulations on that one. I'm also curious about, you know, I started looking at these categories, and I mean, in one hand, I think it's great that there's more categories to sort of broaden it out, but you know, they've got like R&B and they've got traditional R&B, so they've got like a category that like Maya and Jill Scott are nominated in, and they got R&B, a category that like Solange and other folks are nominated in, and they got another category that like the Beyoncés and the Adeles nominated in. To me, it's all kind of the same music, but I guess it's kind of a way for everybody to get a Grammy. What do you think about that?
I mean, I feel in a way it's nuanced. Some is more outreaching, more mainstream, if you want to use that terminology, and maybe that's why the category is differentiated.
Like R&B versus traditional R&B?
But I mean, are those two separate categories?
Yes. Jill Scott.
It's called traditional R&B?
Traditional R&B is a category.
I'm not hip to that.
I don't know if that's new this year, but that's a category that Jill Scott...
Because usually they would call it soul. R&B and soul.
Maybe. You know? It does call it R&B. I'm saying maybe they used to call it that, but right now there's a traditional R&B category and there's an R&B category.
That's probably... Okay, then that makes sense then.
Yeah.
Traditional R&B probably is like soul. Yeah. Whatever. R&B is more... using
maybe they try to, you know, soul, because remember it used to be black music,
right?
You know, exactly. That was it, just blanket
exactly.
Black music and everything else. You know, but then they got hip-hop, then they got soul, then they got R&B,
they killed
then
they got, the soul.
Yeah,
we're gonna call it traditional R&B now.
I mean, you know, I mean, it's I guess, you know, it's better than having black music as one monolithic category.
Well, I think that is a good thing, because I mean, if the traditional artists that will fall in the category of soul music, like a Jill Scott, may not get as much visibility as an artist like Beyonce. So even though her album might be pure genius and excellent, but people don't know about it, and obviously it's a popularity contest.
Right.
So if there's no representation of that type of music based on a general category, you'll never be awarded, you know, the glitz and glamour of your art for your artistry. So I think that's why, you know, we're seeing that.
I want to ask you really quickly about the four Record of the Year nominations. deserving and not deserving really quick. Adele's 25, I say yes, right?
Yeah, 100.
You know, Beyonce's Lemonade, I say yes. Mm-hmm. Justin Bieber's, I forget what it's called, but Justin Bieber's record.
Yeah, I say yes. Yes. Yeah.
Drake Views. Yeah. Negative.
I say, I say
no.
Tell me why.
I think Drake's mixtape, the one that came out last year, uh-huh. 2 years ago, was a yes. I think that was way better than Views. I think uh-huh. Views is bloated. I think Views is.
I mean, On Views is the biggest single of almost of all time. I guess. It's the most downloaded thing in Apple Music.
All right. Well,
like how could it not be?
You're right. I guess I'm so old.
I mean, but I think as a body of work, you know, when you juxtapose it to some of the other artists in the category or artists that should be in the category, I would agree with you that it's more popularity and more about him as a business than you know exemplifying the artistry on that record. I think the record is like whatever. There are a few great moments, mm-hmm. but the record as a body of work as a fluid. You know, thing. I don't think it's.
I mean, the album song of the year, single exactly. of the year, rap album of the year, but record of the year to me is a bit of a stretch. But I digress. Obviously,
yeah.
And then last but not least, you know, the Kanye snub. Do you think that you think Pablo should have been where? Like to me, Pablo. I say what you want about Kanye, and there's a lot to say, and I'm not a big Kanye fan at the moment, but. Pablo's way better than Views to me.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I mean, as a artistic work, you know,
absolutely.
I got to go with Pablo.
Absolutely.
So. Anyway, we digress. We can move on. I'm just curious about you your Grammy thoughts. And there's a lot more to talk about that. Maybe we'll get into that more next week. We got a few weeks. The Grammys are not until February.
So right.
We got a long time. All right. So let's get into some of this stuff. The wait is over. Oculus Rift Touch is about to drop. They got the two controllers, you know, and they're dropping with 50 games. So they're ready to rock just in time for Christmas.
Pretty dope.
Two questions. A, you going to get it? And you going to get all 50 games? How many games are you going to get? 50?
I'm not going to get anything, but I'm excited about it. I'm definitely excited about it. And the fact that, you know, you have such a large offering of entertainment with the gaming options. I think that's dope. And I think that, you know, this first iteration of it, we'll see what the quirks are, what the kinks are, and just how really dope it is, but in concept and just everything that, you know, we've covered on the show and things that I've seen personally, it looks super fresh. But yeah. I'm kind of like, wait, like for the second generation before I make such an investment. But that's just
me. Because we're still talking about $500, right?
Yeah.
Plus what, $70 a game?
Exactly.
Plus the controllers.
Plus the controllers. The
controllers are another, what, 100 something?
Yeah.
I mean, it's talking about a $1,000 investment.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good. You know?
I mean,
I already feel stupid enough for my $499 Xbox that's $299 now. They get you on that every year, though.
Man.
That's every, you know, it's like the iPhone and iPhone S.
Hey, man, as soon as you buy the car and take it off the lot, it depreciates value. Yeah. Same thing with your gaming console.
They do, you know, I think it's a 2 year cycle or is it a 1 year cycle? But. Because I'm sure I wonder when the new consoles will be out, probably next year, which is why they're dropping the price to $299.
Well, they're definitely not coming out this year.
No, because they dropped the price. This year, their push is drop the price to $299, sell a bunch of consoles, and then next year they have a new console. That's how they've been doing it forever.
Course.
They've been doing that forever, ever since the Sega Saturn days. They get me every time.
Man.
I'm excited about Oculus Rift. I'm excited about it. I really want to play it. I'm glad this. I think it's cool they have such a gigantic offering. This is I think this is more of an initial offering than Xbox One had when Xbox One launched. I think Xbox One launched with like 23 games or something.
Yeah, but quantity doesn't necessarily equate quality. And all because they have a huge offering, huge slate doesn't mean that all 53 of them are dope.
Exactly. You'd have to. I mean, there's no way to. You know, it's almost like you got to try it. Yeah, if you copped off 50 games and like 10 of them were good,
exactly,
and you're sitting on, you know, or how do you? I mean, I guess there's someone, you know, so we have an IGN that's reviewing things out there, but interesting. Yeah. So something in the news is there's a story in Wired about Mark Zuckerberg and his team and Facebook about, you know, sort of transforming disaster response. How they have this new thing where they're going to be able to have this hub. Where people in crisis situations can sort of check in and find each other and get information, do different things. This is sort of birthed from a lot of crises, all the way from the Arab Spring, all the way up to the Orlando shooting, which was good. I think that
but not just that, natural disasters as
natural
well,
disasters, earthquakes, of course,
and,
yes,
you know, all those things, hurricanes and stuff.
I'm just gonna get my cynical thing out first, and I want you to tell me why this is good or if this is good or not. this just reeks of a PR puff piece, man. It just reeks of, like, get our attention away from the fake news and the Trump and the this and the that and the, are we a media company? Are we a news company? And let's do a nice puff piece in Vanity in Wired with my team, you know, my multicultural team looking good, and talk about how we're going to help people. That's my conspiracy theory. Go.
Hey, I mean, I think, you know, everything is strategic. So to some degree, you know, every company or person is going to have strategy implemented in how they deal with the audience, the media, and everyone at the party. So I think that's okay. You know, right. That's the language we speak. In terms of it as a piece of technology that I think is useful, 100%. Like, I think that it's already Facebook Live is changing the game just in terms of how the news reporting happens. Like, one of the examples the article cited was when the brother in Minnesota, he was murdered by the cop, and his girlfriend hopped on Facebook Live to document it.
Absolutely.
Like, and that for them was a turning point. Like, hey, we have something here. We can, since the technology is advanced and we have these cameras and we have processors that can be able to, you know, streamline, you know, what's happening in real time, like, let's figure out a way to have some helpful usefulness for this technology and application. And I think that is definitely going to do that with the usage of hashtags and just people being able to figure out if a family member or friend is safe. Like, I saw, you know, with the fire in Oakland, with I think it's like 30 plus people that have died in that fire. Like, a lot of people that I know are from Oakland were actually using that, saying, hey, I'm good. Right. I'm not one of them.
Yeah.
And like, I think it has a strong usefulness for just to help bridge communication much faster, because most of the news I get is either comes from Twitter or Facebook. I don't go to CNN or MSNBC to find news. I go straight to my phone.
I go to Twitter.
You know?
Yeah.
So if there's something happening like in North Hollywood while we're doing a podcast, I'm sure people want to see if we're good.
Yeah, that's true.
It's dope.
All right. I agree. I got to get off my anti-Facebook. I mean, because Zuck put on a book. Could he put on a collared shirt?
Why? Why does he need to put on a collared shirt? That's ridiculous.
I know. He's Zuck. He can do it right. I mean, like, some new sneaks. I'm not mad. Like, I'm not mad at Zach. He's good. But yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think what's interesting about that, you mentioned the fact that this sort of comes from, you know the R&D in a lot of ways came from, you know, real life situations. You know, given the one, like, the woman in her car, and it makes you wonder about, you know, Facebook has, they have all these people working and trying to figure out every angle and thinking how they can use the technology and how they can share and how they can make money and how they can help people and how they can put drones in the sky. But oftentimes, some of the best ideas still come from real-life applications in the field. And it makes you wonder, you know, will the next Facebook shareable stuff come from people? Will it be people out there who figure out how to monetize and use Facebook better than Facebook can? Hey. You know, it's one of those things. You know what I mean? It's like, will the next big ideas and how to utilize and work with Facebook come from Facebook itself or come from the people? And this is an interesting chicken egg thing.
But most of the ideas that we consider big that Facebook has originated didn't come from necessarily Facebook internally. Even this idea came from workers of Facebook that went off
absolutely
externally and built it and then brought it back internally. Yeah. I mean, you look at Instagram. Instagram wasn't built within Facebook, but it's one of the biggest properties that Facebook has.
Yeah.
I mean, Oculus, like we were just talking about, that wasn't a Facebook thing, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I think that to your point, like, it might be other companies that Facebook will acquire that comes up with this dope IP or dope way for us to communicate. And I think that would be transformative in our society. But I don't know if Facebook, I don't know if I'm going to even say that, but I think most of the tools that we use from Facebook that have our attention have come from something that Facebook has acquired.
Well, not you say they want to say it, but I'm going to ask it. Like, I mean, is Facebook an innovator still? Is Facebook an innovator or they're an acquirer? I mean, they've gotten sort of so big that they got the they got the feelers out there in the valley, and when something pops off in the valley, just buy that shit. Or
I think it's
buy
both. It. I think it's
both. And you know, I mean, and their innovation, most of their innovation that we've reported on in Facebook have to do with monetization, which is very important to, you know, shareholders, very important to everyone, right? They're very important to people who, like, how's Facebook going to make money? How are you going to make money, you know? So I get that.
Pointless if it's not making money.
Right, so I get that that's their, you know, their huge multi-bajillion dollar valuation. They've got to actually be generating some revenue, and the revenues in mobile are up, and their innovations in mobile are up, but the innovations in mobile all have only to do with revenue. So the question is Facebook an innovator?
I think they're an innovator because they're able to have the vision to be able to see, okay, we should acquire this company and further develop it.
Right.
Because the company may not have the infrastructure or even necessarily the vision to be able to take what their idea is and really make it for the current marketplace. So I think Facebook does a great job of doing that, being able to realize what's out there in the space they want to be in.
Right.
Okay, let's put some money and put our power behind it and make it even bigger. Just like we talked about with them putting balloons in the sky to have internet in remote places. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure they acquired that company,
sure,
but they're going to make it way doper.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So in a way, it's innovation and acquisition are, I think, twin lineal. They're together. They're twins. You know what I'm
right.
saying? They're a pair.
Fair enough. I guess when you're that big, you're right. Like you have to sometimes innovate. You have to acquire, and then you redo it. So I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I guess I should just stop hating on Facebook. You know?
How could you?
Huh?
How could you?
They're Big Brother. They are Big Brother.
Oh my God.
They are Big Brother. Okay. Speaking of Big Brother Part Two, a company who I love, who actually is probably closer to, you know, as close to Big Brother
exactly.
than anyone else, is Amazon. You know, with all their automation. Yeah, I think that's what I'm looking at. Automation. Like, so we talked about, you know, Amazon having these gigantic centers and having this really state of the art way of shipping, mm-hmm. packaging, and doing things. And one of the ways they do that is, right, they have this, again, state of the art way of, you know, when someone orders something, be able to pick the thing out and ship the thing and move the thing.
Yeah.
So efficient that they talked about revolutionizing the post office and buying a post office.
Yeah.
You know, and they're doing all those things. So one of the things that they're doing now is taking all that technology with some other RF technology and all this other and tracking technology, and they've built the what could be the first checkout free grocery store. They built in Seattle already.
Yeah.
It's
very
beta.
Very
beta
dope.
Only open to Amazon employees right now, but it's mm-hmm. probably going to open in early January, February.
Mm-hmm.
And I know where it is. I was just up there. I'm gonna my daughter lives there, so I think I'm gonna check it out. But what do you think of this?
Well, I think it's changed the gamer. I don't think it's original idea. I think there's been other companies that have been trying to develop it, but the fact that they are the first to kind of put the flag in the soil and say, hey, we're going to lead this, is dope. And just the concept of it all, that you go in with, you know, a QR code that gives you access to the store, you go and pick out what you want and walk out seamlessly to save the time, just the efficiency that it's going to provide people and companies, I think right. it's totally a earth-shattering idea. And especially if you advocate for it to be not just for grocery shopping, but for all forms of shopping, you just go in and go out. Like,
yeah,
that is dope.
The video is crazy. It's like you walk in, right. Like, they show the woman putting the cupcake back, and then it's like boop 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 boop. I mean,
but
yeah,
the downside, and then I'll let you kind of take your points at it. But the downside is that all of our moves now will be tracked. Everything that we consume is tracked.
Yes.
How we even navigate the store, what aisle we go down, how we kind of, what our mapping is for how we enter and exit the store, tracked, and all that is being compiled and used to market
it's like,
to us.
Achilles just bought some bottle of wine. Now he's going for the condoms. He gonna make a left turn. Yep, there you go. Left turn to condoms.
Exactly.
like you know, I mean, you know,
exactly.
It's all of that, you know. It kind of reminds me of, and that's actually a great point, because it reminds me of all what Facebook has done with all their, they've collected so much metadata on mm-hmm. us mm-hmm. and all their other users over the years, that they're able to make algorithms that actually predict what people are going to do, predict like who's going to be compatible, can pick who people are going to get married or not, da da da. And if you add in to people's shopping habits, which by the way, Amazon already has, they already have this stuff on you, because they don't have your food stuff. Kinda, because they have Amazon Fresh, but they have like what you're buying, how many shoes, how many drawers you're buying, how many, you know, books, video games, like they have all this stuff on you already. So they already got a profile of what stuff you'd like. Who knows where that information goes? I mean, this is just interesting. Like, I mean, I guess this will ultimately be used to help, you know, curate to the consumer, a la Minority Report. You know, when they walk into the store, hello, Achille, condoms are on the left, you know, whatever, like, you know, and that's, so, I mean, I guess that's where it's going, but I don't know, I think this is cool, I think it's definitely cool, I wonder about service, I do like...
That was my question to you, like, so what do you think, we talked about a lot on the show, how self-driving cars might, you know, really affect the taxi industry or affect, you know, truckers that, you know, transport, distribute products. So what about like the grocer that, you know, is bagging our groceries or shelving our groceries, like being that there's no checkout, that could really affect jobs.
It could definitely affect jobs. What Amazon will, I'm sure what Amazon's going to tell you is, you know, by limiting checkers, it frees us up to give us more people we call call rovers that are going to come help you shop and curate a shopping experience for you. I'm going to be able to make more fresh sandwiches for you. We're going to be able to offer more. Like, they're going to tell you all the time.
You're really selling it.
No, I know what they're going to say already. They're going to say, like, oh, no, by these five checker jobs are going to create seven more jobs, you know, because and we're going to be. So I you know, look. Who knows? I mean, I know that Seattle and Amazon are all about that life.
Yeah.
So I think they're really trying to do more of a Whole Foods-y experience and less of like a just a, you know, scan and go, you know, experience. So I do think that it'll be a consumer generated experience with real people helping you navigate. But in terms of, I think the idea is to streamline the worst part of shopping, which is waiting.
Yeah, it's efficiency.
Yeah, that part where you're done shopping, you gotta wait in that long ass line,
right,
and wait for a checker to beep beep beep, and yeah, you got a price check on, like, all that stuff is over.
Exactly.
So I do wonder about stuff like, you know, alcohol, cigarettes, when you have to weigh, you know, fruit and, you know, all that stuff.
Well, that's what they're saying. They're just doing kind of like customized packaging of different products. They don't have necessarily a produce section where you can, in the traditional sense, go and get, you know, how many apples or pears if you need to put them in a bag. Like, it's already stuff that's packaged. So,
right. So it's a grab and go.
But I'm sure that eventually it'll expand to that. But I'm interested in seeing how they prevent from people stealing, how they prevent from, you know, there being any technological error where it's charging you for stuff that you didn't put in your bag, or I'm interested to see how they maintain that, the maintenance of that.
You know, and I guess once you come in, you have to scan. So if you start wilding out, they know that. Like, so you and I, me, you and a gang, and Marissa went in there as a gang to go just mob some cupcakes and run out. We'd scan in first.
Like, I mean, you can't even get in unless you have a QR code, though.
So I guess so. They know everybody who's in there.
Right.
And they know what everybody's doing when they're in there. They know where everybody's going when they're in there. I did see, like, though, they did have a deli section. They have people like making sandwiches and stuff. So, I mean, that's, I don't know. That's, I like, look, I like it. I do like it.
It's fresh, man.
It is definitely innovative. This is what I'm talking about when I talk about Amazon versus Facebook. I feel like Amazon's actually really innovating and are doing products and things and services.
Yeah, Facebook is too. Come on, you cannot say they're not. You just Facebook said you wanted to get an Oculus just 5 minutes ago.
That's true. But they don't have a store. Oh, okay. I guess they have Oculus first. They don't have any products, tangible products.
Last question about Amazon Go. So what about the human touch? I know you said there might be a shift from, you know, the checkout folks to them helping you in the aisle, which I don't really see because I don't need help picking out snacks.
You think you don't need help.
Okay. But isn't there a degree of human connectivity when you are in that line? I mean, you might bump into the shorty in back of you and have a spark of a conversation.
Yeah.
Or even the person that's checking you out. Like, hey, Joe, nice to see you again.
Yeah.
You know,
that's part of the
communal touch,
that's
right?
Exactly. It's why you go to your local store and you know your guy. I mean, I remember when I used to go to obviously the same dude for like 7 years. And like, we talked all the time. And like, I remember, I mean, that's part of the experience. But I guess what they would argue is, you know, when you're in line for bread, that's when you just got to step your game up. How about the shorty when a deli line? Like, Vizo's like, I can't do it all for you, Healy. I agree, though. I mean, I think there's something to that. I think what they'll have to sell us was kind of what I was saying, is they'll have to sell you on a new experience.
Right.
And that's not just about convenience. It's about a overall, because this is the other part.
This
is what sells us, you know, what sells us hipsters and millennials, is like, we're going to create a new experience for you.
But maybe not. No one had to sell us on Netflix. No one had to sell us on streaming our music. We just did it.
Yeah.
And hey, well, it, like, we adapted to it. And like, this is better.
Convenience, yeah.
Exactly. So
yeah,
I think it'll be the same.
I agree. Well, speaking of Netflix, you know, Netflix content chief Ted Sarandos is like, swagged out, like, you know, because, you know,
these motherfuckers ain't got nothing us.
Amazon's announced that they too are going to spend about $3 billion, you know, and up their money and get some original programming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Netflix is already committed to 1,000 hours, about $6 billion.
Right.
So, and that announcement, like, if someone asked about Netflix, you know, Ted Sarandos was like, man.
Asked about Amazon.
Asked about Amazon. You know, the Netflix content chief was like, they're not making much traction. I mean, I guess they got a couple shows, a couple little shows, Grand Tour.
I guess they're up in their Prime memberships.
Yeah, they got a couple number more memberships. But, you know, we're not really messing with us.
And okay.
I don't know that that's true,
I don't think so.
But I don't. What do you think of that statement? Do you think that's just him like deflecting, doing a Trump deflecting, like no one's bigger than me, or is it, or is he like, is he worried? Is he arrogant? What is it?
Both.
Okay.
It's hubris. It's arrogance, and I think it's a way to. I think it's the way to kind of like coddle their position and how people perceive Netflix, because right. again, they're not showing anybody their numbers, you right. know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, okay, we know how many subscribers they have, but they're not showing anyone the viewing habits, any of those analytics. So how do they know what Amazon's doing? They right. don't know that. So, I mean, I think that Amazon is in the position to buy a Netflix. So slow down, buddy.
Exactly.
Amazon can buy you.
Yeah, they can 8x you.
Exactly.
Like relax. You know, they can buy you and keep it moving.
And, like, they're going to get better. They're going to have better content. Like, it's going to evolve just like Netflix evolved. They've just been in the game a little longer. That's right. all.
I wonder, though, you know, one-to-one, if you think about what makes up Netflix entire business, I guess the question I'm asking is, Amazon is 8 times bigger than Netflix, but I wonder how much of that, if you look at Netflix content business versus Netflix content business, what the size differential is. I mean, nothing that matters, company for company, company. The other thing is, I have a question for you about Amazon. I wonder, because I think the thing, Amazon's biggest hurdle right now is accessibility. People don't know. I mean, Amazon's biggest hurdle is before they're charging $99 for Prime memberships, which is steep. Now I think they've lowered that bar. They're doing $10 a month now, or $10.99 a month, or something like that.
Right.
They're able to do that. But the problem with Amazon is people still don't know how to get Amazon.
Well, yeah, Netflix you can get from any device.
Any device.
Amazon you have to get from the Fire Amazon, Stick or
Fire Stick, or you got or your PlayStation exactly. or your Xbox.
Right.
So the question is, Who's Amazon's enemy here? Because Amazon seems to be positioning itself against Apple and like not wanting to be on Apple products, not wanting to be on Apple TV. Like when you try to stream, as I do, try to stream Amazon on Safari, it takes twice as long. I don't know if net neutrality, they're like, oh, it's optimized on Chrome. And literally, that shit takes twice as long. So I have to use Chrome when I'm streaming Amazon on my computer. So I wonder, who's the real enemy for Amazon here? Because I think if Amazon made friends with Apple and were on all those products, then they could take Netflix out.
I think you know, it's always the Aesop fable. You know, Aesop fable is the tortoise and the hare. You know, I think they're taking more of a tortoise approach. Like it's a slow climb to the finish line.
Right.
And I feel like they have the capital, they have the liquidity to be able to do that. Yeah. So I think just as if the content is dope, like the content is going to draw the people, you know what I'm saying? And I think that they're beginning to develop fresher content. Like the movie, what's the movie?
The Affleck one?
Yes, Casey
Affleck
one.
Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah, that one's looking really fresh.
Yeah.
You know, it's already getting great reviews.
It's going to win. Probably win an Oscar, at least something.
So yeah, times 10 that with, you know, scripted and unscripted content.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it'll be a different ballgame. Like, Netflix is not going to be on top forever.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to be taken down by somebody.
That's another question. I mean, do you feel a Netflix bubble coming? I mean, I feel
it's
like the Netflix.
A bubble.
Yeah, I feel like they're really going ham right now. I feel like already there is just the ramp up in content from, I mean, look, again, you know, I keep saying this, but it's hard to believe. Netflix original programming is only 3 years old.
Yeah.
Like 4 years ago, there was no Netflix original programming. There was no House of Cards four years ago. So and now 3 years later, Netflix, that's all anyone can talk about
right.
is Netflix and Netflix programming. So what's going to be like in 3 years from now?
I mean, but the same thing that my man's doing to Amazon is the same thing that a lot of pundits did
to Netflix.
HBO did
Netflix.
Exactly.
HBO's like,
wow,
man,
House of Cards. Good luck with that.
Good luck with that.
Right.
You know? Have you heard of The Sopranos? Game of Thrones? Yeah.
Exactly.
So I get it. I mean, we'll see. I personally do not want to bet against Amazon. I think Amazon will be just fine. I think that they do got to figure out a way to get to the people.
My thing that's unknown for me though is I know that Netflix has a deeper penetration worldwide, globally. I don't know if Amazon has that, and maybe that's just because I'm ignorant and don't have the facts on that.
Right.
But it just doesn't feel like Amazon is that far reaching.
Right.
It feels like domestically, of course, they have it, but like, all right, can you get Amazon content in Japan? Can you get Amazon content in Australia?
I don't
know. You know what I'm saying? So
I don't know the answer to that question. That's something that we have to figure out. Okay, so the next thing, speaking of Netflix, is I think we talked about this offline, but Netflix is following suit to Amazon, and I think Starz is doing this too, or one of them, Encore. They're allowing you to download their stuff offline. I mean, Netflix is a streaming service, streaming, and you know, I said to have internet service or Wi-Fi somewhere to stream it. You can't really watch it on planes because airplane Wi-Fi doesn't let you stream anything.
Yeah,
but now. Netflix is introducing downloads for offline viewing. Is this across the board, or is this only for certain?
It's only for certain content, but I think eventually they're going to try to, you know, obviously make it ubiquitous for all their programming.
Right.
But right now, they're you know, some of their top tier content, like Orange Is the New Black, is something that you can grab. But I think it's dope. Like when you are taking that flight, or you're taking that road trip, or you have a considerable amount of time that you need to burn off, and to be able to not to have to kill off your data plan by watching half a movie. Right. Like now you can binge watch on your way to New York and watch the whole season. You know what I'm saying? I think that's super fresh. I think that's going to propel even more industry, because now you want more space on your devices. So you're going to buy the, like we talked about this on the show. You're going to buy the X amount of gig tablet or phone to be able to be able to
have all your stuff.
Exactly.
Need all that stuff. I agree. I think it's gonna be great. I think that you know, now that we've reached the 128 and 256 versions of this, I was talking to our partner Steve, who's like still rocking like a 32 or something, 60. He's like, I have no space. I'm like, man,
precisely,
you know? Exactly. So but yeah, like now, you know, yeah, I think this is fantastic. And I there's things that I, you know, I'm over the whole, like, I never would have thought. You know, I remember, God, the 4 gig. Was there a 2 gig? The initial offering, was it 2, 4, and 6?
The phone or the
initial
or the,
phones?
Or the iPod?
No, the initial iPhone.
I thought it was
phone.
An 8.
Was it a 4 also, and an 8?
A 4 and an 8. Okay. It wasn't a 2.
It wasn't a 2?
Uh-uh.
It was a 4 and an 8. Yeah. Okay. Man, a four gigger.
And you thought you was the shit.
I know. Like, 4 gigs. I'm blowing up. So, I mean, and we talked about, look, I think the iPhone 8s or the 7s's will definitely be a terabyte. So, you know.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Great.
we'll see. Moving on. I don't know what to make of this. I want your opinion on this. Instagram users, Facebook is now, or Instagram is now letting you like other folks' comments and disable comments. I get the disabling comments because, you know, people can get really abusive on that stuff. And, you know, if you want to, sometimes you want to post something and not hear back from everyone.
Yeah.
But this
is another way of interactivity. Yeah. Just like you do on Facebook, if you have a post and someone leaves a comment, then you can like that comment within that chain, right? So you can now do it on Instagram, which I think, you know, is a great adoption of what the parent company's been able to do, Facebook. So I think it just adds more, like I said, more relativity and connectivity with, you know, the people that you are engaging with. Yeah. I mean, increases the engagement level, which is always good for Instagram, keeps you on there. So I think that, yeah, having the various things that they're doing with like stories and just being able to, you know, send stuff direct, and kind of like we talked about all the time how they killed Vine and now how they're trying to kill Snapchat.
Yep.
I think that, you know, these quirky things that you might think are like whatever actually do make a difference. Right. And so I kind of like it.
Yeah, I like it too. I don't really, I'm not super engagey in the like and dislike. I'm not really engagey like that on Facebook. I do use Instagram a lot. Using the comment section to send things I like to other people. Like, I'll sell, like, see something, I'll send it to folks. I'll send something to you, whatever. I don't really go through the comments that much and like other people's comments.
No. You like your own comments. If I leave a comment on your profile, you post a picture, I leave a comment on the picture, you can like it.
But let's say I'm on Troy's thing and you say, good job, Troy, and I kind of like your comment.
You know, I don't know about that. I would think that you could, because that's how you do it on Facebook.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, I guess there's some points to that.
Well, you're saying it's not practical for you and how you are on Instagram. You don't necessarily like other people's comments.
I'm not looking through Troy's comments and be like, oh, there's like Keely said, good job. You know, I mean, you know, maybe casually if I see it, but I'm not checking for it. So, but I guess let me, because there's people who do that, kind of go through and read all the comments.
But what happens if you're in a conversation, though? You're in a conversation with your boys about a picture, and I say something that's just crazy, and you're like, yo, I like that.
Right.
That, I mean,
yeah.
It's
engagement. I mean, look, there's no reason to not do it, I guess. Right. You know, this just keeps people in the ecosystem on the app
right
longer, which is good.
My good for us,
man. No, let me ask you this. So I hate to report this to you, Keely.
Yeah, right.
I know you had all your hopes pinned on this one, but Apple Watch sales dropped 90% since April. Like these stats on the Apple Watch are horrifying. They're first terrible. Of all, yeah, they the first time when they first dropped, they shipped 200,000 units in a single day. Now they're down as like to 4,000 units a day, barely, like everywhere.
That's crazy.
Like not just at one store, like everywhere. The funny thing to me is that like they have the audacity to put out the Elite, the Apple Watch, the edition model. See if the Elite thing was $10,000 aimed at like the high celebrities and millionaires and all that stuff. They only sold 2,000 of those joints. That's embarrassing.
It's very embarrassing.
That's embarrassing. So,
see the thing how they, you know, throw out some of their statistics is they put the Apple Watch in a category that's bundled with other things, including Apple Music. So you can't get the proper analytics on it.
Oh, the sales are great.
I'm sure it's way even less than what's being reported there, because that's just being reported based off receipts that they're able to track from a satellite company.
Right.
So, I mean, I called it, bro.
And who knows what? Yeah, exactly. Because who knows what their total losses are? I mean, how many Apple Watches are sitting at the factory? Like how many Apple Watches are just sitting around? You know, like unsold.
Man,
like the losses are huge.
My question to you is, it's more so, you know, the wearable industry. I mean, we went to CES about maybe 3-4 years ago. We were so juiced about wearables. Oh man, this is the future. Blah blah blah. So we've seen multiple iterations of it from various companies. Like, and there's one company that seems to be dominating since they emerged, Fitbit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my question to you is, do you think that Apple is going to innovate in this space? Do you think Samsung is going to innovate in this space, or is it going to flatten out and Fitbit just going to be the dominant player?
I think that we're going to probably see, I'd imagine this is probably, and this is not how people want it, it's going to have to go to software, because I feel like, instead of hardware, in other words, there's a lot of dope watch companies that are making some really cool smart watches, like that look amazing, that look fantastic, and have just basic functions. Then there's companies like Fitbit that dominate on functionality, but like on aesthetically are not that great looking.
Like whatever.
Yeah. Well, especially their watches are kind of like, all right, you know. Then there's companies that make the bands. The bands are huge. There's companies that make the front facing camera band. Yeah. There's one that you can do the full screen on the back, like touch screen. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if it's gonna go. If Apple and Samsung are going to switch to just sort of software, you know, and switch to like and let someone else do the hardware part, because I think
what do you mean software?
Well, as operating systems like Safari or whatever, have a version where you can throw all of the apps on, you know, on your Fitbit, or use some of the Apple apps and stuff and Apple products on a Fitbit. Because where Apple's failing to me is Apple's really good at consumer technology. Obviously, they innovated with the iPhone, innovated with the iPad, innovated with all this other stuff. They just can't seem to get it right. These watches, although highly functional in a lot of ways, are just ugly. This is ugly.
Yeah.
So I don't. That's their biggest problem. So it's a design issue, and they're really hung up on this square, very specific big face design, and it's kind of killing them.
I would argue that it's even more than just a design issue. I think it's a functionality issue. Like I don't need to take a call on my phone. On my watch. I mean, it's cool that maybe a text message, you know, scrolls up, but I don't need to take a photo with it or watch a movie on it.
You're arguing the only thing you want to do is track, you know.
Yeah, track my biometrics. Exactly.
Right.
That's all I need. Track my biometrics.
Take time, watch time, track biometrics.
And keep me on time. Keep my schedule on time. Like buzz my wrist when I have a meeting or an appointment. That's all I need.
I mean, are you okay with like looking down and seeing a text message?
Oh, yeah. Anything that's informative that I can easily get. But in terms
you're trying
of
to watch a movie,
you're selling me on having a phone conference on my wrist.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly. Like all and whatever apps that are on there we're looking at, we use like two of them. You know, it's already like 10 apps too many.
Right.
So I agree. So we'll see where this goes. But Apple cannot sell you on we make the best, you know, alarm system, one timepiece, and
exactly.
You know, and biometric situation.
Is this Apple's first fail?
Yes.
Mm.
Yes. I mean, if you don't count.
Steve Jobs is turning over in his grave.
Yeah, I mean, this is their first film in a while. I mean, I'm trying to think of. I feel like there were some iPod launches in there that were kind of mediocre, but maybe I'm wrong because I feel like that, you know, sales wise, everything they've launched at, I can't remember the stats, but I feel like everything they've launched at a keynote has sold, record breaking. Yeah, has sold. Yeah. Like every single product. I mean, yeah. So they've been very judicious about what they launched. There's no eye pins, no eye mug, nothing silly. So, yeah, I mean, this is the first one they launched with much fanfare, and it's just not.
You're gonna find an iWatch for $30.
Yeah,
Target,
and
liquor store.
I mean, I'll get one too. Because of those 4,000, of those 2,000 or 4,000 sold, the highest number, like something like 80% of those is a cheap one.
It's a sport.
No one is paying the price.
Why would you? You're paying for a band. Yeah. It's fucking stupid.
No one's doing that. This is a really flawed thing. Really quickly, the Supreme Court has ruled against Apple in their final fight. I mean, this happened, you know, Apple's lost this battle 4 times already. They took it to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court ruled 8-0 against it. Give it up, Apple. It's over. Like, you stole their shit. It's done, right?
Wait, huh?
Samsung lost against
Apple.
Yeah. I'm saying Apple keeps fighting it, and it's gone all the way to Supreme Court.
I said, Samsung keeps fighting it. Apple won. And so Samsung is saying, hey, well, we're required to pay you all this amount of money, but we only stole a certain portion of it. We didn't steal the whole thing. So why are we paying you all this money? The money we should be paying should be the percentage of what we stole. So that's why it's going up to the Supreme Court.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm flipping it. It's the Samsung versus Apple. Give it up, Samsung, is what I mean.
Right.
Because what I mean. But 8-0 ruling, you know, they're going to, so in other words, they'll be give some of this money back that it paid to Apple.
Yeah, that's what they're arguing.
So, okay. Well, I mean.
Like, if I steal, you know, a credit card out of your wallet, I shouldn't be penalized to pay back your whole wallet. It only took one credit card. So that's kind of the argument. We'll just pay back the credit card, and then we're good.
Right.
Versus the 10 credit cards.
It's a slippery slope to wonder if how far that innovation would have gone with the Samsung Revolution had they not stole that stuff.
Hey, whatever.
You know?
that's an interesting theory.
They didn't steal enough because it's just blown up. But.
Right. Exactly.
All right. This is real quick. You know, I just want to touch on Hairspray Live is coming up. You know, NBC is really investing in live TV. They started with Sound of Music. Then they did The Wiz. Mm-hmm. And then
with Peter Pan.
And then Peter Pan. Yeah. And now they're doing, Sound of Music, Peter Pan, The Wiz. And now Hairspray. Spray. Mm-hmm. Fox did Grease, which was a blockbuster, because it's huge for them.
And they did a Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Which actually didn't do that well for them.
Right.
But it also wasn't live either. Right. What do you think of this trend, and how do you think Hairspray is going to do?
I think that this trend works because it's seasonal. They do it. They place the programming in a time where families are together, where there's times of sharing. And I think the properties that they are kind of like reinvigorating are properties that people have seen traditionally on stage, on Broadway, and that are interesting to see on TV. They're moments. And so I think that, you know, the things that are successful still on TV are sports and water cooler moments like award shows and et cetera and stuff like this. So why not figure out a way to, you know, invest, you know, a lot of that money into producing the dopest experiences that we can now witness on TV and share and have the same shareability that we would have on maybe when TV was more dominant, you know? So I think it's good. Like, I actually think that there's probably other ways that we can innovate in this space, and I mean that selfishly. Like, maybe we can come up with some IP of how we can come up with some content that could be. I mean, we kind of are already, but you know what I mean.
I agree. Well, I mean, like, well, for instance, they're doing which I hadn't thought of. They're doing plays now, which is the next obvious thing. So they're doing A Few Good Men, and Aaron Sorkin's involved. Obviously, he wrote the play and wrote the screenplay as well. But like, so Aaron Sorkin doing A Few Good Men, and that's always going to be a buzz of who they're going to cast and what roles. And,
right.
And, you know, I'm sure eventually this will lead to a Hamilton, you know, down the road. And so
it's the same theory. Like, it's nothing like being in the stadium watching a football game.
Absolutely.
But same thing, it's nothing like being, you know, on Broadway and watching a play or a musical. But you can still get the similar experience for much cheaper, obviously,
TV. I think that, you know, not to turn this into a brainstorming session for us, but I wonder what do you think is next? What will people want to see live that's not a sporting event?
Wait, like, what will people want to see live?
Yeah, like, what's the next live event? Is it a concert? You know,
me whooping your ass?
Pay-per-view!
I mean, but they've already done concerts. They've done Adele. Right. They've done, I mean, any of the top the top artists, like, I would love to see live on TV, you know?
Yeah.
But that's a good question. What besides sports, musicals, plays, and
they've already
concerts?
Done, and they've already done, you know, they tried the Undateable Live. You know, they tried to do a sitcom live.
Hmm.
The whole season of that. I mean, which I think that had more to do with the sitcom not being good. It was kind of whatever. I mean, I remember 30 Rock did a big live one, which is funny and good. So, I mean,
maybe like a live comedy special.
Maybe. Huh. That's an interesting idea. Moving on, vinyl records are now outselling digital downloads in the UK. There's a huge, huge vinyl revolution in the UK. I mean, people are buying, and I think this is, you know, sales are up 100%, you know, over each year. They just jump 100%. And
it's crazy.
Now they're exceeding digital downloads, which I think is pretty, like, I had to read it three times to understand, like, what they're talking about, because that's remarkable.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I guess it's...
What's your theory as to why?
Well, I mean, look, the UK has always had a different value on... I mean, the UK has a whole genre of rare grooves. It's like a genre. Rare grooves. They've had a huge value on black music and soul music and all things that, and they still hold that. Like all of their white artists, you know, whether it's Adele or Amy,
yeah, they're pulling from that as inspiration.
Yeah, but you know, Ed Sheeran, I mean, Annie Lennox, whoever you're going to name, is pulling from
exactly.
that, and then bringing it back to us in the United States, and then and our white kids here being like, oh, what's this? Adele can sing, you know.
Right.
So I feel like there's a whole culture in there that's surrounded around. A very specific period, which is like, you know, the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
So because you have a whole generation that grew up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s and want to preserve that, they keep reaching back.
Hmm.
Like, that's what's never left there. Like, all the artists that are still coming out now are still trying to capture the sound of the greats.
But are you saying that most of these sales are from legacy artists?
No.
A lot of these sales, like contemporary music, I'm saying
contemporary music being burned on vinyl. What I'm positing is there's a culture, there's an overall culture that like appreciates and wants to hear, just like they want to hear a Marvin Gaye record.
Yeah.
They want to hear stuff on vinyl. So they want to hear the Adele record on vinyl. They want to hear, yes, it's both. I think they want to hear all the old rare groove stuff.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, it's because it's a rare groove culture.
Right.
And there's all that stuff. And then if you're in a rare groove culture, you don't want to hear, you know, the stuff. You don't want to hear songs in the key of life on digital. You want to hear it on vinyl. You want to hear the warmth and all that stuff, if you really know that stuff.
Right.
And my daughter, who's 20, is all she buys is, I mean, she listens to all digital too, but she's buys as much vinyl as she can. And she's 20. So, I mean, there's a culture of people who really appreciate music and appreciate certain music from a certain genre that want to hear it on vinyl. Now, you're not hearing a lot of stuff from the 90s and 2000s on vinyl, but you are hearing a lot of stuff from the 80s, 70s, and 60s and on vinyl. So, I don't know. I think it's just a cultural thing.
So that's one thing that I would like to unpack to see exactly what those sales are.
Yeah.
Are they of more contemporary outputs and artists, or are they throwbacks? Are they legacy artists? Because, I mean, I feel... If there is an Adele album that's on vinyl, like, it still was recorded digitally. It was still,
yeah.
I mean, so I get that, you know, there's a different, you know, feel to vinyl, but is it really that different if I recorded it digitally?
Sure. And some of those artists, like Mark Ronson, like, I mean, some of those artists don't record digitally.
Right.
So it depends, I guess, really, if you really...
Most of us do. Most artists these days do.
Most artists these days do, but if you again, I just feel like these kids and non-kids and, you know, kids of Generation X or Generation Y's and all the way up through baby boomers are super knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And they seek the knowledge and they teach those knowledge to their kids. So they're all the millennials are like, they want that stuff. They want to hear whatever the Killers on vinyl and all that
right.
stuff. So I think it's interesting. I do not think that'll be replicated here.
That's not true. I mean, replicated in the sense that it will outperform
yes.
digital. Okay,
no,
I understand.
I mean,
but it's still on the incline
yes.
here.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
We have pockets. I mean,
like, right.
we have our urban city pockets, you know, and people like my daughter in Seattle and our whole, so every, her and all our friends are buying vinyl like it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just people who do that. But I want to think that I'm one of them. The new Guardians of the Galaxy trailer is out. It looks cool. Groot. Groot, Baby Groot's on point. Have you seen the trailer?
I have.
Yeah, what do you think?
It's funny, man. Yeah, it's funny. I think it's going to be cool.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
The effects look good. I like the trailer, playing up the humor in the trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really good way of not really showing us too much of the dazzling us with too much action.
We're showing what's going to be enough, there. Right.
Showing just enough action. That's a good way to do a trailer.
Yeah.
Unlike example, I just saw the Live by Night Ben Affleck movie. And I thought it was excellent.
Right.
The first trailer was so bad. It was so action heavy. There's somebody trying to sell me the action that it felt like they sold me a different movie. So.
Right.
I'm excited too.
I think it'll be a smasher like the first one was. Yep. Even though the first one was unexpectedly a smasher.
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, people are really on the lookout for this. The ensemble of characters are dope. You know, the personalities and how. Yeah, it's just, it's a good mix of action and comedy. I love it.
I agree. All right. So, I guess that's it. That's all I got. That's all. Anything else? That's all we got.
Man, that's it, man.
All right. Well, we will come back next week. We'll maybe talk a little more about the Grammys and some other stuff, whatever else is popping. Other than that, where can the people find you?
Man, the folks out there can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. And where can they find you?
They can find me at Joe K. Braz, well, on Twitter and Instagram, and on Snapchat at JK Braz. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagrammy, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.